I'm Joanna Shanks.
I'm Emma Taylor.
And this is Murder, She Spoke. This is part two of the Annie Burjesson case. If you haven't listened to part one, please go back and listen to part one before you continue listening. We started part one by discussing who Annie was. Just to recap, she was originally from Sweden. She was living in Edinburgh. She had finished a scholarship and she decided to go back to Sweden in December 2005. We assume she was going back for Christmas to see friends or for unknown reasons. After travelling to Prestwick Airport, she was then seen walking out to Prestwick itself after spending less than 5 minutes in the airport. And the next morning, she was found dead on the shore of Prestwick. Some of her possessions were missing, a fleece and a file of fax to be certain. I'm not sure if there were other things missing. Those were the only two that were confirmed. She had some bruising. There'd been some tests done which indicated that she had freshwater diatoms present, which called into question the theory of drowning by seawater. And some experts in Sweden offered to do further testing pro bono, but it was refused by the Swedish authorities, and the Scottish authorities weren't much help either. We finished part one by summarising that Scottish Review spent quite a lot of time investigating the case, compiled a dossier, reviewed a lot of documents that were not previously made available to the media, and they were sent on to Police Scotland requesting that the case was reopened, and that request was refused. As I say, I'm not entirely sure when that happened. I think it might have been around 2013. Just to continue with the unusual circumstances, I ended up going down a massive rabbit hole with this case, which is probably why it ended up taking me so long to do the research for it. But I'm going to stick to the facts here. I'm going to stick to the points that I've raised. I'm not going to go down any rabbit holes because I think we could literally talk about this case for a long time. So here's some other information which might throw you a bit. So as I said, Annie had waist-length hair. It was determined that it had been cut off post-mortem and she was left with hair that was between 5 and 15 centimetres left on her head.
That's not a lot of hair at all. That's a crop, more or less. Hang on, so in the CCTV, yeah, she obviously had the full head of hair, and she'd made an appointment with her hairdresser the next day. What on earth happened that her hair was cut off after she died? Is that something to do with what the authorities did in Scotland? Were they trying to retrieve evidence? How bizarre. Oh, that really creeps me out, actually. I really don't like that.
Very bizarre, isn't it? A fatal accident inquiry has been refused, and the Burjesson family were told it is not in the public's interest to open one. Now, the Scottish authorities apparently hold tissue samples of Annie's, which they have refused to release despite pressure. When Annie's family accessed her email account after she died, they found that all of her emails had been deleted. And Annie's friend, Maria Jansson, found that none of her phone calls to Annie had been registered in 2005, and the phone company refused to discuss it with her. Now, I don't know if that's to do with data protection, or if they refuse to acknowledge it, maybe even to the family or anyone else. Basically, there's been no sort of interaction with them. It's just sort of been a bit of a dead end.
So data protection, I would say, would only be if she was asking for details of Annie's phone calls generally. However, you should be able to get records of your own phone calls, either made or received to your own telephone number. I find it really odd that perhaps they've been served some sort of gagging order or been told not to discuss it because of the controversy surrounding the case. That's very bizarre as well. the more that you tell me, the more I just cannot believe that she committed suicide. Not that I did anyway, but I just cannot come to that conclusion.
Do you want to hear the next part, which is totally conspiracy theorist?
Yes, I'm down the rabbit hole with you now.
So, as I said, her best friend, Maria Jansson, found that none of the phone calls to Annie had been registered in 2005, and the phone company refused to discuss it with her. And then apparently Maria began to receive silent telephone calls, and then Annie's family started facing issues with their email accounts.
Oh, I have chills. I literally have chills running up and down my spine. That's horrific. Oh, yuck, no. From their point of view, I absolutely understand why they're being so dogged in their quest to find out what happened to Annie. But I'd be shitting myself.
Emma, I was shitting myself doing the research for this case.
Absolutely. I mean, it goes to show the bravery of them and how much they loved her and how determined they are to find out what happened. I mean, if that was my family member and I was being told, oh no, yeah, they just killed themselves. They were due on a flight home. They paid their rent, you know, all of the things. And, oh, don't mind that bruising that's all over their body. No, oh, we won't release any of the records that you would normally have access to in a situation like this. And no, we won't review it. I know we won't give you any information. And then you start receiving weird phone calls and your emails are getting weird. Yeah, I'd freak out big time. I would be tempted to just let it go because I don't want to end up found on a beach somewhere either.
Police claimed that Annie did not make or receive any phone calls in the 3 days prior to her death, despite people remembering having spoken with her. Annie's mother claimed that following a visit to Scotland in 2006, she discovered that Annie's hair still exists.
Sorry, what? Hang on. Right, so it's what? It must be in police evidence then. So where is it? Where's her hair?
Apparently there's 60 to 70 centimetres of Annie's hair missing, which Annie's grandmother is offering a reward for. So somebody has clearly told Annie's mum that somebody has her hair in their possession.
That's so sick, though, because two schools of thought. One, yeah, perhaps that is the case, and that's really screwed up. I don't know how they would have it unless they got it from the police, perhaps, or they were the murderer. Or school of thought two, which is unfortunately more likely based on what we've seen on different cases. Someone's taking the piss and they're winding her up and they're just tormenting a poor family, which does happen all too often.
Absolutely.
Plus, without DNA testing it, they could have any blonde hair.
Well, that's the thing as well, though. I don't think DNA testing could be done on it because no follicle.
Oh, of course.
If it's been cut. I mean, if it had been ripped out of her head and the follicle was attached, they'd have DNA. But if it's been cut...
So it could be anyone's blonde hair then, really.
And I think even then, I think some forensic testing on hair is disputed. I'm not sure what all the details around that are, but the fact that there would be no follicle, because it would have to have been ripped out of her head in order for them to be a follicle, if it's just been cut, I don't think you could determine who it belonged to from that.
It breaks my heart to think of, for example, my gran offering money for some hair that had been cut off my head after my death, just because she was so heartbroken at what happened to me. That just kills me to think of that.
So Annie's grandmother is offering a reward for the return of her hair, and the reward that she's offering is for 50,000 Swedish crowns, £4,000. So the money that she's offering as a reward was originally the money that she was going to give to Annie for her wedding.
Bless her heart.
Yeah. Any information regarding that can be sent to Annie's mother at info@annierockstar.com. That's the email address, which can also be found on their website, annierockstar.com. That's the way to get in contact with them if anyone knows anything about Annie's hair or anything else for that matter. Sky News Storycast have released a 6-part podcast entitled What Happened to Annie. They've just released it earlier this year. In the article that I read about it, it says that they've spent the best part of a year investigating the case. I haven't gone too in-depth with it, and I haven't listened to the podcast because I didn't want it to influence this episode. I'm going to listen to it. I haven't yet. But from the article on Sky News that I read, it did say that there was a bit of detail which showed that they've done a significant investigation because they managed to have some classified files released.
Wow.
I don't want to go too in-depth into it, as I say, because I don't want to step on their toes. They've obviously done a huge investigation, and if people want to know further details about it, they can listen to the podcast that Sky News have released. As I say, it's called What Happened to Annie. However, a couple of details that were in the article, which I felt would be acceptable to mention. Classified files were eventually released detailing conversations with the Scottish authorities, although the documents have been heavily redacted by the Swedish Foreign Ministry.
So these are documents surrounding the conversation between the two authorities, the two countries, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Justification for this has apparently been given on the grounds that to disclose it would jeopardise Sweden's international relations. And the cause of death has been redacted from the death certificate.
Wow.
So they've actually got copies of the death certificate, and it shows that pretty much all the information is... There's next to no information on it, basically. Now, the Scottish Crown Office Procurator Fiscal have refused to release the post-mortem photographs. Annie's family have never seen the post-mortem photographs for the post-mortem that was carried out in Scotland. In 2014, right, this is where we're going to get conspiracy theory shit.
I'm already there. I mean, the fact that it sounds as though her death has been used as some kind of pawn in a political landscape is really stirring me up.
Well, listen to this, Emma. In 2014, the Scottish Mail on Sunday published an article which made links to Prestwick Airport and rendition flights. Do you know what rendition flights are?
I have no idea what that is.
I didn't know what they were either. Rendition flights, Emma, are apparently flights which the CIA operate in order to transport terror suspects between prisons.
Okay, so how are they linking that?
So the UK and the US have denied the existence of such flights through Scotland.
Scotland's a natural link to the US. Lots of people fly through Scotland to get to the US.
Well, existence of such flights through Scotland have been denied by the UK and the US, according to an article by Fox News. Now, apparently, Emma, this is going to blow your mind a little bit. So it's been alleged that aeroplanes with a certain tail number that have been linked to rendition flights have been seen at Prestwick Airport. There is a website called the Rendition Project, which has been created by the rendition research team at the University of Kent. Now, the directors of that, their co-directors are Professor Ruth Blakely and Dr. Sam Raphael. And in it, they've gathered information that evidences that rendition flights do exist, and they've done a huge amount of investigation and they've documented their findings.
Just out of interest, does their university fund or support this research, or are they just members of the faculty who have taken it upon themselves to do this?
I'm not sure. It has the University of Kent and
rendition research team at University of Kent, University of Westminster, and the Economic and Social Research Council. So it's been funded by the UK's Economic and Social Research Council and is accredited under the Global Uncertainties Programme. The Guardian has described the rendition project as a groundbreaking research project which sheds unprecedented light on one of the most controversial secret operations of recent years.
One of the planes that had been identified was a Gulfstream jet with a specific tail number that had been linked between flights from America and Guantanamo Bay, as well as others, you know, flying from Jordan and Pakistan, mm-hmm. Allegedly transporting terror suspects from these countries to the US and other prisons.
Now, I just want to take a minute to tell you about the Toolbox Scotland. They're located in Dalry in Edinburgh, a short walk from Haymarket. They sell loads, hand tools, power tools and garden tools at very competitive prices. They also have a website with free delivery on orders over £80. They sell a large range of brands: DeWalt, Craig, Makita, Stanley, Triton, Draper, Silverline, many, many more. They're open from Monday to Saturday if you want to stop by, or you can have a look online at their website, which is thetoolboxscotland.co.uk. That's thetoolboxscotland.co.uk.
Prestwick has links to rendition flights. How is that being tied to Annie?
So apparently, there's a US journalist named Christina Burjason who has a reputation for holding bodies such as the CIA to account. And according to the 2014 article by the Scottish Mail on Sunday, on the day Christina Burjason broke the news that the CIA were using the airport for rendition flights, Annie Burjason travelled through arrivals at Prestwick Airport. 7 weeks after passing through the airport, Annie was dead. Annie's middle name was Christina.
Do they believe that she is this journalist and she's been targeted as a result? Is that the theory?
It sounds like it. This is all in relation to a 2014 article by the Scottish Mail on Sunday. And other news sources have said this information hasn't been verified. They couldn't verify it. So this is literally coming from one news source.
Also, it must be noted that it's not the most reliable of news sources. It can be quite a dramatised publication at the best of times. And they do love a good conspiracy theory. So I think we do need to take everything with a pinch of salt. However, that is really very, very odd. Her middle name and surname were the exact same.
That is confirmed because that is on the website that Annie's family created, annierockstar.com. Her name was Annie Christina Burjason, and this journalist was called Christina Burjason.
I would love to believe that the CIA or whichever other secret agencies would be clever enough to work out that they weren't the same person, but stranger things have happened.
So, as I said, Sky News Storycast have released a 6-part podcast called What Happened to Annie, which follows their year-long investigation into the case. And as I say, this was just released a couple of months ago in March this year, 2020. As I say, I haven't listened to it because I didn't want it to influence today's episode, but I am going to listen to it, absolutely, because I want to hear what came of their investigation. And the Rendition Project website, as I say, it was created by the Rendition Research Team at the University of Kent. There's a bunch of information on there. You know, I started doing a bit of investigation into it and I just went down a massive rabbit hole and I thought it's too much for what we want to cover in our podcast. But if anyone is interested, there's a lot more reading, a lot more that people can look at in order to get some more information on this case. But as it stands, Annie's mum, Guia Burjason, she is still hoping for a fatal accident inquiry into her daughter's death. She would still like a proper investigation and some closure on this matter because she doesn't believe that Annie committed suicide. Annie was a strong swimmer as well, was something that her mum noted. She was a strong swimmer. That where she was found was less than, you know, sort of a metre at its deepest. All her belongings were around her, with the indication that she had fresh water in her body. She doesn't believe that she committed suicide and she just wants to know what happened. Now, following a trip to Scotland, and I think this is in 2006, Annie's mum, Guia, she actually located the people that identified the person on the beach at 4:30 p.m. on the day that Annie was last seen. They weren't able to confirm who it was. But it seems that the Scottish authorities gave reassurance to the Swedish authorities that it was verified to be Annie, and that apparently wasn't the case. They reenacted it on the same date, different year, and they said that at the distance where this figure was seen, you could not identify even whether it was male or female, let alone that it could have been Annie. So, Emma, that is the case of Annie Burjason.
I just don't understand with all the conflicting information and evidence, how it could be a cut and dried suicide case. I don't blame her family one bit for still wanting to seek justice for her. Unfortunately, if any of the powers are at play that we think possibly could be, it's so unlikely they're ever going to get that. If you're up against the governments of two different countries, possible secret services from another country, one of the biggest powers in the world, I mean, you're screwed, really. You're never going to find that information out. Possibly it could be one of those things in 50, 60 years when they release the documents. You know how sometimes in America and even in the UK, it's decades and decades and decades later on down the line, documents are sealed for however long and then eventually released. Usually when all the people involved are dead and cannot be prosecuted, that's the kind of thing that might happen here. And do you know what? It would be the most relieving thing in the world if it was, oh, actually, we found a suicide note, but because it said whatever, we couldn't release it. I don't think that's going to be the case.
I mean, all the indications said that she was just planning on going home. However, another thing to note was that her family were under the impression that she was afraid or was being threatened before she came home. You know, as I say, there were conflicting sources about whether, you know, she was travelling home for Christmas or whether it was an unplanned trip. The impression that I got from the research that I did, it seemed as though, to me anyway, she was either a bit fed up or, you know, a bit spooked. To me, it seemed like a bit of a decision on a whim to travel back. The fact that she'd only been in Scotland for 6 weeks, she'd only been here since the 25th of October before she travelled back to Sweden. The fact that she left, the fact that she packed so light, and the fact that she potentially either missed that flight or didn't stay at the airport for whatever reason, she can't have checked in because she would have been able to leave. To me, it just seems like she tried to leave at the last minute and didn't catch that flight. And after that, she was found dead.
You do have to wonder if she was spooked. So say we believe the conspiracy theorists and, you know, the rendition project and, you know, the CIA or some Scottish, British secret service thought she was this journalist who was exposing them and had been tracking her, watching her, doing whatever. And she's panicked and wanted to go back to Sweden. And then on the day, has she seen something at the airport that's made her walk out and leave? And then she's been attacked and something's happened to her? My head is spinning. I, like I said before, I'm not really a conspiracy theorist. I do kind of shake my head at them sometimes and think it's a bit ridiculous, but you can't help but be sucked into this. It's just too bizarre. There are certain cases over the years that you see that with, and, you know, they do say that fact can be weirder than fiction, but there's too much there. It's too much of a coincidence with the journalist's name and just the details of the autopsy. And it's more so, see if all of that was there, right? And you've got all these weird theories surrounding it. Even if they were falsified, you had the autopsy report and the pictures, you'd be like, okay, well, you know what? Maybe the family just don't want to accept it. We've got the official reports. Everything's there, tells you what you need to know. Unfortunately, there's just some coincidences. It's the fact that both the governments are being so secretive about it. They're not releasing anything. They're refusing to reopen things. That's what gets me. What are they hiding? Because they're hiding something. There has to be something hidden there. Or they would just release it all. There's something bizarre about it. And even if they'd labelled it a suspicious death, but to have just said it's a suicide and, sorry, it's a suicide, that's it, nothing to see here, move along. No, I don't buy it. Sorry.
Do you have any questions or any theories?
I guess the most straightforward theory would be she's encountered someone who is just your bog standard murderer, which is really horrible to put it like that, but she's gone through, she's early for her flight or her flight's delayed, she's pissed off, she's gone for a walk thinking, do you know what, there's a nice beach along here, I'll go for a walk. She's met someone. Sounds like it's pretty quiet out there if only two other people noticed her. And, you know, they possibly she's been murdered. It sounds like if there was fresh water in her lungs, maybe not where she was found. But then again, I don't know. It sounds like the evidence is pointing to her having been moved and then placed there.
Can I ask you a question, a direct question? What are your thoughts on the fact that there's an indication that there was freshwater diatoms found in her body? Putting on your conspiracy theorist hat, can you tell me what path your thoughts go down in that regard?
Okay, if you're putting my tinfoil hat on, the CIA have waterboarded her.
That's exactly what I thought.
Yeah, because when you look at that website, it's talking about the CIA torturing people. You know, as I was thinking earlier, if she's got fresh water in her body, either she's been taken to the nearest body of water, which seems rather bizarre and odd. However, if we are going down the conspiracy theory route, then if they think that she is this journalist who has this information, who is exposing them, and she's in the country, then yeah, they might be trying to get more information out of her. And then they've disposed of her, and then the countries have all covered it up.
My thoughts exactly. You know, when it was the fresh water thing, the first thing I thought of was the links to CIA and Guantanamo Bay and all the rest of it. I thought, immediately in my head, I thought waterboarding. And then I thought, well, if they do think that she's this journalist from the US that, you know, has a reputation for holding the CIA to account, to me that would make sense that they would be trying to extract any information they had, that she had. They would try and extract any of that information before they did the deed.
And the weird bruises and the square marks, the square bruising. I think the lack of information about toxicology, did you say something about that earlier?
I didn't come across any information in regards to toxicology.
Which is very telling.
The only thing that was in relation to testing was Procurator Fiscal have samples of Annie's tissue, which they have refused to release despite pressure. And some tests were done in Sweden from bone marrow, which indicated freshwater diatoms. They offered to test her other organs pro bono in order to be able to prove or disprove that theory. And that was refused by both the Swedish authorities and the Scottish authorities.
There's no other way that I can look at it other than a cover-up. Just the way that there's so much secrecy surrounding it.
Annie's mother, Guja Börjesson, she is still campaigning for answers. I don't know if there are going to be any developments now that Sky News have released this podcast.
I wonder if there's a petition or anything, because it's the type of thing that
There was a petition, and I believe that Guja Börjesson has actually also met with Nicola Sturgeon.
Okay.
But the petition, I believe it's now closed, and it was basically requesting more information, and a fatal accident inquiry, I believe, into Annie's death.
So they've tried to go through all the official channels and have been refused at every door. That must be very, very difficult to accept as a family.
Well, I feel like you would have no closure at all.
I'm amazed that they actually got her body, if there is something untoward that's happened.
I was surprised about that as well. Apparently her body went back to Sweden a couple of weeks after she passed away. I was surprised that they sent her body back. That was surprising to me.
I would be very interested in knowing whether the family identified her body or if it was just at the funeral home or wherever they stored her body before she was buried or cremated. Just as sometimes you hear stories where, you know, the corpse is unrecognisable and theoretically it could be anyone's corpse that's sent. You know, if we're really going down this, put my tinfoil hat on.
There was no indication of that. It seemed that her body was returned to Sweden and the undertakers opened the coffin. And it was only then that when they looked at her body and noticed the bruising and things that, you know, sort of questions were raised in regards to the state of her body. And then that led to, why has this been quickly determined, you know, a drowning by suicide, when actually there's some evidence on the body which throws that into question?
I think the other thing, actually thinking about it, is if they were going to send a body pretending it to be Annie, they wouldn't have sent one with cropped hair and bruises on it. Still, really, really bizarre, the whole thing.
Very strange, isn't it?
Yeah. I really hope that if anything similar was ever to happen to me, not that I'm interesting enough for it to happen to, that my family would make the same efforts. I know they would, but it's just...
so sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it really, really is.
Trying to even deal with that.
I think also because there's governments involved, like a lot of the cases that we've looked at and other podcasts and even just generally covered in the kind of true crime publications. Someone goes missing, for example, and have they committed suicide? Has there been an accident or have they been murdered? Those are generally your kind of, that's your options that you're kind of looking at for the most part, I would say. To have all the conspiracy stuff coming out and the governments refusing any access to documents and all of those extra theories coming out, I just think that would really, really complicate things. How do you go about living your life? How do you go about moving on from that when you feel that even your own government is conspiring against you and withholding information from you? How do you go and live in your daily life? I'll listen to that podcast as well because I don't think I physically couldn't after listening to this.
I think it's, you know, if you're genuinely interested, which I think it would be very hard not to be interested by this case, and you want to know more details, I would go and listen to that podcast. I'm going to go and listen to it and find out what it was that Sky News discovered in their year-long investigation, get some more details on the case, because as I say, we've split this over two parts, and even then I feel that there were rabbit holes I could have gone down which I avoided just purely trying to keep it concise and to the point. I am sure that the podcast by Sky News would be quite interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm bamboozled, so.
Definitely. So maybe you've got a nice, lighthearted, crime-related fact for us, just to lighten the mood a little after that.
I do. Obviously, nobody can see, but Joanna has a brand new mug that's covered in little bees, which is absolutely adorable, and it fits with the crime that I found. So this is relating to 2018. Amazingly, bee theft is quite common in the apiary industry. In 2018, authorities busted a man named Pavel Veteranov for allegedly stealing more than 2,500 beehives worth more than $875,000 from orchards throughout California. Veteranov was likely renting out beehives for cash to various farms to help pollinate their crops. In 2019, there was a spike in bee thefts in Belgium, and near the Flemish town of Tessenderlo, a whopping 150,000 bees from hives were recently stolen. I did not realise that there was a big bee theft industry.
I didn't realise there was so much money in bees.
No, I didn't either. I mean, I guess honey is a big thing.
And expensive. I don't know how common or popular beekeeping is.
I think it depends on the part of the world, but I think it's becoming more common because people are wanting to be more green and save the world.
Yeah.
Any kind of theft involving something live, I'm always amazed at. And I know everybody just does these things for money anyway, but I can't wrap my head around wanting to steal something live and then profit off it. It just is very alien to me as a concept.
And did you say that it was 2,500 hives worth just under $900,000?
Yep. Yes.
Oh my God.
But then again, how are they valuing that? Are they valuing that as in how much the honey would be worth over a certain period of time? I don't know how they do that. How do you, I'm just wondering how economists would sit down and value.
Value bees.
Yeah, it's really strange. It's just a really, really odd one. I guess that just shows the ingenuity of some criminals, that this guy is like, I know what I'm going to do. These people need their crops pollinated. I can just nick some bees from orchards and then I'll rent them out. I mean, this is really bizarre. This is such a strange scheme to come up with.
And also, I feel like it's not the kind of thing that, you know, like you get the things like copper thefts. And, you know, I don't know if it's happening in Scotland, but there's the whole thing about people nicking platinum exhausts here.
Yeah.
So platinum plated exhausts. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like, you know, opportunists that would say, oh, okay, there's something I can steal and make money from. Fine. But I feel like if you were going to steal bees or steal beehives, you'd surely have to educate yourself a little bit. Like, you couldn't just storm in there, grab a handful of hives and just get the hell out of Dodge. Do you know what I mean? I think you'd have to actually...
You need to have the suit.
Yeah, you'd have to have the suit. You'd have to have, like, means. And I feel like it would have to be, like, an inside job or someone. Because I feel like if I went to just steal some beehives...
It would be like my girl would end up dead. And he was helping different farms pollinate their crops. Do you think he gave them like a sweet deal? I'm sorry, I can't help it.
Do you think, you know, if the bees were later recovered, do you think it took the sting out of it?
Oh, don't, because that's how bees die and that's mean.
I guess if the thieves were clever enough to steal like 2,500 fives, they obviously weren't bumbling idiots.
Oh, that was quite good, actually. I quite like that one. You've been listening to Murder, She Spoke. Thank you so much for listening. We would love to hear from you, especially if you have any case suggestions or any other recommendations. If you want to get in contact with us, we have an email address. It's info@murdershespoke.net. Our social media accounts are our Twitter account @MSS_pod. We're on Instagram @MurderSheSpokePod and we're on Facebook @MurderSheSpokePodcast or MSS Pod. Thank you so much again. We'll see you in a week.